All right, welcome to this class. So to start off with, I have only taught for 4 years, and so there's probably some people here are more experienced than I am. So I don't have all the answers. The things I'm saying have come from, some from my own experiences, but also some from some research I've done. So I'm glad you're here. It's good to have a plan before you start out the year rather than trying to figure it out as the year goes along. Personal experience speaking there. So the first question I gave on your handout, there's not really a right or a wrong answer to that one, but I'm really curious why or how you would answer that question. Why is it necessary for us to find a way to motivate our students no matter if they fall into the gifted or normal categories? I'm classifying gifted and normal as two different classes here. And the reason I asked that question is, last year that I taught, I had a student who was rather unique for one reason, well, several reasons actually, but primarily this one. He found out about 3/4 of the way through the year that he could goof off for 90% of the day and work the other 10% of the day, take his work home, spend a half hour on his homework, and come back and it's all done. And he'd get decent grades, okay? Decent grades. Not superb, but decent. What's wrong with that? That's kind of another way of asking that first question. What's wrong with something like that? Why do we want to teach them to be motivated? Why do we want to motivate them? Exactly. He will have to learn to apply himself sometime in life.
He could be doing so much more.
He could be doing so much more. I like that one.
You get fired one of these days.
That's real life speaking. No personal experience on my part. Well, at least I don't think. All right. Any others? He's being an example. Good.
Well, there's a verse in Ecclesiastes that says, "Whatever you find to be good is your life."
Yes, those are all very valid reasons. Very good reasons for why we want to motivate our students. All of us, now when I say us, I'm referring to the ones here that are married and have children potentially, and the ones that aren't. At some point, Lord willing, we're all going to want our children to work hard and apply themselves in whatever they do. And if I'm assuming with the crowd of people we have here, you know, the next generation, there will be some gifted children, more than likely. And teaching them to apply themselves 100% to whatever they're doing, regardless of the fact they may be able to do it faster, they may be able to get by with less work, is something that we want to pass on. Okay, so let's dive into some things that might be able to help us with this. And if you have anything, comments, questions, raise your hand, and once I get done with what I'm saying, I'll let you ask a question, make a comment, whatever it may be. That way you don't derail my train of thought somewhere besides here. Okay, so did some research online, and it was interesting to read people's opinions on this matter. People who, some of them I had to suspect that they maybe had some kind of Mennonite or Protestant background, and some people who I think were fairly secular. But there were at least four things that were almost universally written in all the different places that I found. First of all, it mentioned help them set both short-term and long-term goals. And this one was interesting what some people said about this one. Generally, a gifted student is not very good at setting his or her own goals, because they've never really had any goals to set, because they've always attained what they have been shooting for. And so helping them to set a short-term goal, or helping them to get started. Now, it's not saying that you set the goal for them. They still do that, but you help them get started with how to set the short-term goal and the long-term goal. And I would say that the long-term goal is probably more critical than the short-term goal. Because a short-term goal can tend to be more easily met than a long-term goal. A long-term goal helps them to see into the future, and help them to plan into the future. And that brings us to point number two. Help them by talking long-term. Help them to see what they're learning how what they are learning will be incorporated into their lives in the future. And I found this interesting as I was going through here, that a lot of these things I'm going to say would apply to normal children too, or even slow children, or what we would call slow children. So it's not. This isn't necessarily just for the gifted. And I did have to wonder a little bit why the WFTI board put two workshops. One was motivating the gifted. The other was encouraging the. Had something to do with helping a lethargic. That's what it is. Yeah. It seems like those could have been somewhat gone, been answered by one talk. But anyways, so keep that in mind as we go through here. What I'm saying here is not just for a select group of students. It should work with any group. Because I think all children have these aspects. Number three, find their passion. All children have a passion, something they enjoy, and then find a way to encourage it. That can be a little bit tricky, because by doing that, that generally means more work. And who as teachers likes more work? At least, generally I have enough, or at least so I think. and it takes work, it takes energy of you actually putting yourself into their life. And involving yourself in their life by figuring out what they enjoy to doing it and a way to encourage them in doing it, whether it's actually doing it with them or getting the supplies around or, you know, encouraging them to talk to their parents to do it. There's a lot of different ways that you can encourage a student's passion. And then number four, encourage and help them track their progress throughout the year. Most gifted students are probably going to balk a little bit at setting goals. And if you can help them not only set the goal, but also set up a way that they can monitor their progress throughout the course of the year, they'll probably be quicker to set goals. And once again, like I said, you'll probably have to help them with getting started on tracking their progress throughout the year. And they may not even think about it. It may take you as a teacher coming to them at some point. You know, say you've got a student that's been struggling with... we'll say creative writing. We'll say you got a young man who doesn't like creative writing, and you've told him, talked to him about this, and you set a goal for him in this class, and you're going to help him track his progress. Well, one way you can help him track his progress is by, when you see some improvement, let him know. That's a way of helping him track his progress, because he might not see it in himself. He may look at his first paper and his third paper, let's say, and they look the same to him, but you can see some small, subtle improvements. We'll let him know. Help him to track their progress and encourage him or her in that. All right. Moving on. This next thing that I have to talk about comes from a man who taught in the public schools for a number of years, and I don't remember what his name was, but he had a system set up, a point system set up, that helped him to be able to grade a student's effort level. Because often the problem with a gifted child is we can see they're not putting forth their full effort in whatever way that is. The student that I had, if he would have worked even half the day, as opposed to just 10% of the day, his grades would have been it would have been much better. And you know, maybe you could say, well, it doesn't really matter if he's not working as long as he's not distracting his classmates. And yeah, that's theoretically true, but it doesn't work that way most of the time. So this guy had a system set up, and he taught in a public school, so he was dealing with children who were non-Mennonite, just your average children out there in the world. But he said it worked amazingly well for them. And I have to think that if it worked amazingly well for self-motivating them, then it should do the same thing within a Mennonite circle. And I would also make a disclaimer that, I don't know if disclaimer, but just a word of advice. If you get done with this class and you're like, boy, that was a great idea, I'm going to do that this year, run it by the school board first. Because most, I say most, now maybe I should clarify that and say the three schools that I've taught in, none of them had a specific way of grading a student's effort. And we tend to be, from people I've talked to, things I've heard, we tend to grade the academics and neglect the effort. But if you can incorporate the effort into your grade, you can get a much more accurate grade. And a student who may struggle in something, whatever it might be, but puts a lot of effort into it, he can get a better grade that way, he or she can, if the effort's graded along. So here's how this guy would do it. Now, his was a behavior program, but I think it would work for effort as well. So at the beginning of every day, and I adjusted it just a little bit, but at the beginning of every day, every student had 4 points. 4 behavior points. And they could lose points throughout the course of the day for misbehaving. And if you were applying this to an effort level, you could say if you see a student getting distracted or goofing off, not working when he or she is supposed to, you could subtract a point for that. Or this could even be, you could even include not only effort but behavior in this as well. They talked out of turn without raising their hand, they lose a point. And you keep track of this as the teacher up at your desk. When they break the rule, you don't say anything to them at the time. You don't say anything to them. You just simply mark it down. At the end of the period, or the end of the day, whatever, this guy only taught one period, so it was a little bit different. But at the end of the day, or at the end of the period, he would keep that student in briefly and tell them, you broke this rule and this rule, how many it was, and lost this many points. And he said the students know what rule they broke. You don't have to tell them, explain to them how they broke it. They know how they broke it. They knew what it was. So this student started out with 4 points, and he got distracted once, so he's down to 3 points. And he was teasing one of his classmates. I called him a name and lost another point. So he's down to 2 points for the day. That same day, they took a test. And the grade that he gets is going to be an average of his test grade and this grade right here. Now, his behavior grade is 2/4, or as you would reduce it down to 1/2, or 50%. He had a 50% grade for his effort / behavior that day. On his test, he got let's say he's a pretty bright student, he got a 96% on his test. So then you take the 96% and the 50%, add them together, or average them, and that's his final grade for that test. So that would work out right here too. 146% divided by 2, his final grade for that test is actually a 73%. That student knew the academics backwards, forwards, no questions, but his behavior was not in line. And this guy said, you might be surprised. You might look at that and say, boy, that's maybe, I forget exactly what all adjectives he used to describe that. But he said it only takes a couple of really nasty grades and the students start picking up that it's their responsibility with their behavior, not the teacher's. The teacher's responsibility is to encourage them, is to keep track here, but the teacher can't make a student stay at work all the time. I mean, I guess you could if you got this big whip and stood there just cracking it over top of him the whole day, but we don't really have time to do that, at least I didn't. And he said it takes a couple times of some bad grades, and those students will start learning. They will start understanding that it's their responsibility, and when a student realizes that the responsibility is 100% his, he said that is the single best motivation you can get for a student. When the motivation is coming 100% in their, or from one, from the, it's when the, blah, when the effort is conditioned upon, or is placed on their responsibility. I don't know if that made sense. I just kind of, my tongue got all twisted up there. But anyways, hopefully you know what I'm saying there. And so this also works out with, let's put another student here. Last year that I taught, I had a dyslexic student. And he did pretty well in math, but he really struggled in reading. And suppose that you have a student that struggles in reading like this, and you take a reading test, and let's say he gets a 53%. That's failing, right? But this student also is a student that's very well behaved, and he tries. He works hard. So throughout the course of the day, he keeps his 4 points. So he now got a 100% effort grade, plus his 53% test grade, average the two, he's up to a 76%, which is passing. So that's what I'm saying. by effort. And you can you could adjust that however much you want. I just use the 4 points for simplicity's sake. You could make however many points you wanted, but like I said, if you're going to do it, you're probably going to want to run past your school board. Or at least let the parents and the school board know what you're doing. Because otherwise there may be some confusion and questions and what's going on here. And it's better to get that figured out at the beginning than halfway through the year. Or partway through the year. So that was the first thing that I found. Let's see. And I found that, like I said, I found that very interesting. Because like I said, we tend to put a lot of emphasis on the academics. And we don't put as much emphasis on the effort. And so if you can figure out a way to grade the effort with the academics, you can get a more accurate picture. All right, moving on. This comes from a couple of articles I found on the internet, also from a book entitled Mindset. Have any of you read that book entitled Mindset by Dr. Carol Dweck? I've only gone about a quarter of the way through the book, to a quarter to a third, but I can already tell you should read the book. And I think this is what also really helped me understand a little bit, probably one of the reasons why gifted children tend to struggle with effort easier than somebody that isn't gifted. And I think I'll get to this a little bit later, but I think that's partially our fault, but I'll get to that in a bit. Okay, so in this book called Mindset, everybody in the world has one of two mindsets. And the mindsets, they can be in relationships, schoolwork, authority, it can be really anywhere that this mindset can be. And as a person, you can have one mindset towards schoolwork and the other one towards something else. It doesn't mean, when I say two mindsets, it's not over your entire life. It's just the certain areas of your life. But there are two general categories of mindsets that people have. And I'll tell you those in just a little bit. But first of all, I want to give you a scenario. So I can use your imaginations with me here for a little bit. So you are 18 years old, still in school, and you're at school that day and you're taking a semester test. And then I don't know if any of you, if I have any schools here where the semester test counts more than a regular test does, but I've taught in a school like that. You're taking a semester test, so it is important, this test is. And you know your stuff, or at least you think you do. And you get to school, and you're fairly confident in your test, in the ability to take this test, but somehow you missed some information or you were studying the wrong stuff, whatever it might be, and you come back with a C+ on that test the next day when it comes back to you. And you are normally a B plus to an A minus student is where your normal average is, and you got a C+ on this test. When you got to school that morning after you took the test, you had to park on the street because there was no parking in the school parking lot. So when you leave the school for that day, you walk out to your car and you see a parking ticket under the windshield wiper. You head home from that. So you've got two bad things that have happened. You've got your C+, now you've got a parking ticket. On the way home, you're so disturbed about all this, you don't see a stop sign, you run the stop sign. Well, the car behind you just happens to be a police officer, and he very nicely pulls you over and gives you a ticket for running the stop sign. So by this point, you are just totally up in the air about this. So you grab your phone, you call your friend, and you spill out your problems to your friend, and your friend acts like it's no big deal. I mean, tomorrow's another day. Just accept it and move on. It's not, you kind of feel let down because you didn't quite get the sympathy, if you want to use that term, you were hoping for. And you feel betrayed because your friend doesn't seem to empathize with you. Now, Imagine yourself in that situation. What would you be thinking by the time you hung up that phone? And here's where the two mindsets come into play. The two mindsets are the fixed mindset or the growth mindset. Okay, and their names give a hint as to what they are. Now, does anybody want to tell me, how would you feel in that situation? Tell me how you would feel if you went through that situation after you got off the phone. What would you be thinking? How would you feel? Anybody care to be brave enough to share? How would you be feeling? Let's say, how would you be feeling about yourself? Let's put it that way. How would you be feeling about yourself?
Negative.
Pretty negative. Huh?
Grouchy.
Grouchy? Yeah, you probably would be. And that's probably both of these mindsets would feel that. But are there any of you here that if you went through a situation like that, you would get done and you would just say, I just can't do anything right? Would you feel that? That is the fixed mindset. When you reach a failure in your life, you take that failure and you measure your value as a person by that failure. I can't do anything right. I'm never going to drive again. What's the point? I mean, the next test, I'm not going to study near as hard for the next test. Why do it? I can't get a good score anyway. Okay, these are actually, Carol Dweck and I think some of her colleagues actually put this problem to a group of college students and had them write down their answers. These are actually answers that came from college students when they were faced with this situation. And that's the fixed mindset where your value is measured by what you can do or in the situation can't do right. Now, the students with the growth mindset, or I'm going to say people with the growth mindset, when they see when this whole series of bad things happen to them, they look at it and they don't see them as being any way connected. There's no connection. There's no connection between the fact that I got a C+ and a parking ticket. The C+, well, that just means, well, I'm going to study harder on the next test. I forgot. There was another response from the people with the fixed mindset. People with the fixed mindset, after they got off the phone with their phone, they say, nobody cares, I'm alone. The people with the growth mindset, when they got off the phone, they really didn't... My friend just didn't, they just didn't understand everything. I'll call them again tomorrow and we'll maybe have a... It's not that they weren't trying to be mean, as it were. That was not the bell. No, someone goes, whew, that scared me. All right. Another response from some people with the growth mindset that I found fascinating is some of them said, well, I'll go talk to my teacher and see what I need to do for the next test. A student with the fixed mindset is not going to come to you as a teacher and ask what they need to do more for the next test, because that test proved to them that they are an absolute failure, and they're not going to come tell their teacher that they're an absolute failure. They measure their value by their failure. And I was thinking about that in relation to gifted students, and I think you can fit it in fairly easily. So a gifted student is not used to failing. They're not used to failing. And a gifted student is probably going to struggle with the fixed mindset because they're not used to failing. And I found it interesting. We as teachers are all about teaching our students how to succeed, right? That's one of our goals. We want to teach them how to succeed. But we forget the fact that we need to teach them how to fail so they can succeed. You don't have to just have the fixed mindset. You can switch. But it takes a deliberate effort on your part to look at a problem and realize that that problem does not define who I am. It does not define who I am. I can learn from this problem. I can learn from what I did wrong, and I can do better next time. That's the growth mindset. And so, like I said, I'm only about a third of the way through this book, and I have not gotten to the point in the book where it says, how do you help a student switch from a growth to a fixed mindset? But if you really want to learn, get the book and read it. I just didn't have the time because I put off too long with starting on this workshop, so I didn't have time to finish the book. Let's see if I can remember anything else from that. Back to the gifted student. A student who struggles is more prone to have the growth mindset because they're used to failing. But it's really bad if a student who has the fixed mindset happens to be someone who struggles as well. I'm not saying that every student that struggles automatically has the growth mindset to the point where they say, well, I'll just study harder, do better next time. No, if they get the fixed mindset, which they can, it's maybe even more dangerous for them, because a gifted student can slip by with minimal effort and still pass. A struggling student is not going to be able to slip by in his or her schoolwork. And with a fixed mindset, a student who struggles in school, they do something, they do the test, do the lesson, whatever it might be, get the grade back, and they're just like, I tried as hard as I could, and look at what I got. What's the point of even trying harder next time? So their effort level goes down. It's actually it's almost the opposite of a fixed mindset person. And that's why I go back to effort. If you can grade the effort of a student, it can help tremendously. And that's why I think this comes back to us. And I know I did this as a teacher. And probably all of you who are sitting here, if you've taught for a number of years, can probably think back on times throughout your time of teaching and see that there a time where you measured a student by his or her grade on an assignment. And you also measured a student by the lack of his or her grade on an assignment, whatever it may have been. I know I've done that. It's something that I'm going to say it's a natural part of us. When a student is succeeding, doing well, we tend to think that student is valuable. And when the student is struggling, we tend to think that, well, they just try harder. It may not be the case. You know, we may have the fixed mindset if we weren't there. We may be sitting there not understanding exactly what's going on in our students. And so if you have a gifted student, figure out a way to motivate them by... Maybe you wouldn't have to grade the effort, but those students have to understand the value of effort. If you're not going to grade it, teach them the value of effort. We teach them the value of good grades. I know I did. But teaching them the value of effort is even more important. Teaching them that it's okay to fail. I still love you and care for you, and I'm still going to teach you, even though you didn't quite get it right the first time. I had a student last year who, in teaching algebra, he was a great student to have. I could teach something to him one time, and boom, he had it. It was great. I had another student who I could teach it to her six times, and she still didn't have it. And in that situation, I don't think I ever said this that I remember, but I remember sometimes thinking, well, some of my algebra students, well, if you could just be a little bit more like him, it'd make it easier for me. But that's not really who they are. That was my problem there, not theirs. They were trying hard. Some of them were. Most of the time. And for me to be able to place value on them, regardless of the fact that they can't do it just like the next person, it was a challenge, and it had something I had to work on, and I think it's something we all need to work on a lot, because the students will get a feeling from us. They'll know whether we as a teacher value them based on their performance or effort. There is a difference. Performance I mean by their grades, effort I mean by how hard they try. A person who has a fixed mind that's placed in a classroom where the teacher values a student based on his or her performance will wilt completely, because they are afraid of failure, and as a result of failing, they're like, well, this is the thoughts that go through their mind, or some of them, they're like, well, you know what, if I don't try anything, I can't fail. I've got it. I'm going to be valuable because if I don't try, I can't fail. And so they lose effort. They lose the willingness to work. Praise this child's effort rather than their achievements. And I found this interesting. This was a comment by a mom, actually, talking about raising a gifted child. Or maybe it was, I don't know if it was a gifted child or just a child in general. But she said, would you tell a child, you know, they're doing something, let's say they're building something out of Legos, and they show it to you, and you say, well, good job. What did you just compliment them on? Did you compliment them on the object they built, or how much time and creativity it took to get that thing there? This mom said it takes a little bit more time, but if you want to communicate to a child that you are focusing more on their effort, something more along these lines. You put a lot of effort and imagination into that. That's great. You're not complimenting the result. You're complimenting what it took to get to the result. And a student who struggles versus a student who's gifted, a student who struggles, if they can be commended for the effort it took to get to their grade, even if it is a 53%, they're going to feel a lot better about themselves. And a gifted child who is praised for their effort or praised for their lack of effort, but not praised, or encouraged in their lack of effort, if they can understand that the effort's more important than the grade, that will help them with their motivation. Okay, so I've been talking for quite a while, and I'm not done yet. The next thing I have is something that I did through the, I think it was every year that I taught, and it wasn't original with me. I learned this from one of my co-teachers the first year I taught. It was one of his ways of grading effort on certain subjects. How many of you took literature in school? How many of you took Abeka literature? How about CLE literature? Okay, good. How many of you did those meditating for meaning in the CLE book? Okay. How many of those questions are one-word answers? Very few. Very, very, very few. One thing that I like to encourage my students to do in literature, oh boy, they hated it to start off with. Oh, they hated it. But it helped me to see if a student was actually putting effort into something. I told them, each of those literature questions where you have to explain something, where you have to dig a little bit deeper, if it's a one-word answer, okay, that's 1 point. But if you have to dig into the problem, that problem is worth three points to me. That's how I'm going to grade it. There's 1 point for getting the correct answer or close, because grading literature can be, those kind of problems can be somewhat up to the teacher. But 1 point for the correct answer or 1 point for getting close to the correct answer. The second point was for writing a complete sentence. Every student knows how to write a complete sentence. They know it needs a noun and a verb. At least they're supposed to by the time they get to 8th grade. And so a student who is having trouble figuring out... Oh, sorry, I should tell you what the third point was. The third point was, I called it creativity. But what I meant by that is if I could look at the answer and say, that student thought through their answer. It may not be exactly what the answer key was wrote down, but I can see they put effort into it. So even if they may not, even if their answer was way off the right answer, they got 2 out of 3 points for that because they wrote a complete sentence and they thought through it. That's effort. That's not so much grading. There is a little bit of a grade put on the actual answer then, but it's a third of the actual great amount. And so like I said, when you any student can write a sentence answer, even somebody who struggles with reading, doesn't like literature, they can write a sentence answer, a complete sentence answer. And so you can look at a student's problem and tell if they were putting the effort into it or not, whether they deserve the effort points. Now, the one problem with doing it that way is that means you have to check all the literature on your own, which some of that it can be tiresome, but it can take a long time depending on what curriculum you're doing. But that was always one of my favorite subjects to check, because those complete sentence answers, or lack thereof, depending on who the student was a snapshot into that student's brain, a snapshot into their effort amount. And I thoroughly enjoyed reading and seeing which students were actually thinking through the problem, what they were coming up with. All right. So hopefully you have filled out that worksheet by now. And I'm not going to ask anybody to read this, but that situation that I gave you those three, four things went wrong, which mindset did you find yourself in when you came to failing? I'm not going to ask you to say, but let me ask the question differently. Did you see yourself in one of those two mindsets when you thought about when you fail at something? I know I did. When I read that, I did. I remember I could think back on times when I had the fixed mindset, but I also looked back more recently in my life and realized that when it comes to failures, God's been taking me through a lot of difficult situations, and I believe that's His way of changing me from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset. And if we can do that to our students, it will benefit them tremendously, it will encourage them, it will motivate them. Okay, to the paragraph on the bottom of your handout, is probably true. This is specifically written about gifted children. And I found this interesting because this is probably true. In fact, I know it's true. Many gifted students lack self-management strategies such as time management and study skills. Because gifted students often progress through the early years of school without being challenged, they sometimes fail to develop the self-management skills that other students master. In the early grades, good memory and fast processing skills can compensate for note-taking and other study skills. Often, educators attempt to teach students study skills before students need those skills to be successful. This process usually frustrates both the teacher and the students. Students are more likely to internalize self-regulatory skills when they need those skills to solve the problem at hand. Providing gifted children with an academically challenging curriculum early and throughout their school careers promotes opportunities for developing self-management skills. I found that interesting, and I think it's true. If a student at a young age learns that he or she doesn't have to work as hard as his or her classmates to get this assignment done, they're not going to learn how to self-manage their time. A student knows, I would say by the time they get to second, third, fourth grade, maybe even before, a student knows how much effort they have to put into their work to get their work done. They know if they have to put all their effort into it, or if they can do 50% and still get by. They know that. And a student who has realized that he or she only needs 50%, they haven't learned that you need to manage your time wisely at your desk, or else you might not get your work done. And then the student moves on through school, and it gets up to this high school, and suddenly they're thrown a bunch of work that takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and that's all good, don't get me wrong. That's great. But suddenly they don't have a way to, they can't manage the load because they never learned how to do that in lower grades. Giving them a challenge every now and then is a good thing because it forces them to learn how to self-manage their time. All right. I'm going to hand out another handout for you. In the meantime, does anybody have any questions, comments, or opinions? Like I said, I don't have all the answers, but I've been talking here like I do. So, any other opinions?
Where teacher developed the effort grade, where did he keep track of that wasn't on the board for all to see, was it?
No, it was not on the board. It was kept privately at his desk. This is, well, actually, when everybody gets it, I'll explain what this is. Any other questions or comments? Yes?
Because if you don't have a test, every student have a test every day, so what would be the point of the effort score? How would you do that?
That's why there would have to be some thought put into it, especially if you grade like CLE grades, where you only grade actually get a grade for the quiz and the test. There would have to be some time and effort put into this. Now, I'm the kind of person that I like using, when it comes to grading students' grades, I like using this wonderful thing called Microsoft Excel. And using Microsoft Excel, you could keep track pretty easily of their behavior grades for that entire week, because you know it's about every five lessons you have a quiz, so you actually get a grade in that. You can keep track of their grades for those 5 days and average those five to average that with the quiz.
Do you have a certain subject you pick it on, or
you could do that in all subjects, but I see this teacher in this system right here, he only taught one class. So this was for one class. It was a PE class. So, like I said, there may have to be some adjustments. If you give students 4 points for the entire day, and then whatever they get affects every single subject, you could do that. But maybe that's what the children need. I don't know. But that means their behavior is all the more important. Or it's, you know, you could do four points per grade, per subject. There would have to be some decisions made there. I'm not up here to make them for you.
It seems like you might run into some hot water breaks with these guys across the board, like maybe some subjects that work, but my school board wouldn't even let me add on a point in math for saying good morning. Because they didn't do that. It wasn't their math grade.
Right. That's another reason why I say you would want to run it by your school board. But I do firmly believe that if you want students to be motivated, you could tell them this, I don't think there's anything wrong in telling them this, if you want students to be motivated, they have to get graded on their efforts somehow. It needs to be important.
Just an idea, but you could tailor that for a student. Like if one student hates English, then soccer, put him on this thing, his effort thing, and goes with his English group.
Right.
And if he loves math, well, he'd probably get his math done. You can kind of tailor it.
You're saying if there's a grade he's lacking the effort in, give
right.
him this.
Be it science or history or whatever.
You could do that. Mm-hmm.
But I do like the idea of blending their behavior with their academics. I like that idea.
And the thing that I thought was, you know, when I was studying for this workshop, the thing that I liked about this system was you can incorporate behavior, you can incorporate effort, you can incorporate student relationships. You can put the whole package into something like this, and it takes a lot of. I mean, you would probably still have to have some punishments for certain infractions, but sometimes last year I saw that student. Not working, and I'm like, what do I do? I can tell him, and I did numerous times, but he wouldn't listen. Well, this would make him listen when he wouldn't listen to me.
Is it always like you could probably adjust the amount?
You could adjust the amount, yes. He actually used 3 points, but like I said, it was just one class. And I don't know, I haven't put enough time and effort, I haven't thought as far as if I were to do it, how I would actually do it. I haven't thought about that. It would just be, I think it would be a way that you could definitely grade, effort. And you wouldn't have, I'm sure there's other ways you can grade effort. I mentioned that the extra points for problems where they have to write out, I'm going to say like essay-like problems, you can add more points to those. It's providing that your school board's okay with you doing that. Add extra points to those and grade them on their effort.
seems like this would be really nice in certain situations where you're really needing something, not just across the board, all their grades. But when you need it, pull it out. Maybe for this student in this spot.
Right, but I do think that it's not, the students are going to, if this is something that's always in as a potential, it's going to carry more weight in the student's mind than if it's just pulled out when I get really, really bad. Because then I'll go up to that really, really bad point and then just stay there and she won't pull this out. But if I cross that line, she'll pull it out and then I'm going to have to walk the line, as it were. I'm just saying that. You know, and a student who behaves well doesn't have to worry. I mean, they're not going to lose any points if they behave well. A student that doesn't behave well and needs that extra motivation to do that, or I'm going to say effort. A student who puts a lot of effort into their work, if this is just for the effort thing, they don't have to worry about anything because they're not going to lose any points. This is for the student who's not putting the effort that you would like to see into it. All right, anything else quickly? Okay. That paper that I gave you says top 20 suggestions for motivating gifted kids. I don't like the word kids, so gifted children to think. I'm not going to read through all of these. I'll let you do that on your own, but there was a couple I wanted to point out specifically. Number one, I mentioned, and the ones I'm going to point out are ones that I think I talked about or hit on a little bit here in what I was saying. Number one, by Steve Miller, raise the rigor and the expectations. Failure is an option in the real world. This means you have to be more rigorous in designing, prepping, and executing different concepts. Your kids will step it up only when you teach it up. So that thing of teaching them that failure is an option, failure is okay, you can learn from it. Number two, they're used to being praised on their intelligence, not their effort. They do not have growth mindsets. Watch this YouTube from Carol Dweck. It's incredible stuff. Or read the book called Mindset. Make a huge effort to reward and praise their effort, not their intelligence and natural talent. Number four, asking for, I didn't say anything about this, well, maybe a little bit. The literature that I was talking about, the three-point grading system, could be a little bit more of this, but asking for evidence to back up an answer can get them to think deeper. What did you read or see that makes you say that? Deeper questions will result in deeper answers. Surface questions will result in surface answers, challenging them a little bit. Number 11. The important thing to remember about gifted students is to challenge them to go deeper, not broader. Also, reward the process rather than the right answer. Or I would reword that and say, along with the right answer. Research fixed versus growth mindset. They have likely been rewarded for always getting the correct answer rather than their thinking process. Number 15, read the book Mindset by Carol Dweck. By focusing on a growth mindset, it may get them working more. They're used to being praised for how smart they are, not how hard they work. Works for low students as well. And number 18, try to change their mindset. If they've always been told that they're gifted, failing might make them feel awful. The frustration would be just the beginning. Instead of everyone telling them how smart they are, go for it. You can learn anything. This implies a process, trying and failing and trying again until you've got it right. If they believe that being challenged will help them learn more and keep them at the top, they will go for it. Make a game if you can. Let's see how many new words you can learn this week. Or what do you think is the best way to do this? Good luck. Like I said, you can read the rest on your own. And obviously, this list of the 20 best ways or top 20 suggestions for motivating kids to think, this is one guy's idea. And there's probably more. But those 6 that I read fit with the other stuff that I had found, so I thought I would point those out specifically. All right, I think they forgot to ring the first bell. Anything else before you dismiss? Or before I dismiss you? All right, if not, thank you for your attention, and you are dismissed.